I want to thank you for allowing me to come and speak to you this morning. If you don't know me, my great aunt, and she wants to make sure that she gets that grade in there. She's sitting right back there, Luanna.
I want to say that you were a good student.
Well, well, yeah, I'm afraid so. But yeah, it's been a long time ago. But anyway, and of course, Jim was my great uncle. If you're visiting, might kind of let you know a little bit who I am. You know, it's my wife would tell you it's kind of ironic that I got assigned this topic this morning. Are you ready? Because I typically procrastinate on things. Seems like. Particularly when it comes to set-down work. I don't know why, but, you know, why should I do it right now? There's always time to do it later. You know, sermons, well, everyone knows that you write those Saturday night before the Sunday you're supposed to give them. Or if you don't have time then, maybe you can just get up at 4 a.m. and write it then. That works too sometimes. You know, the first 2 years that Rhonda and I were married and I was still in college, I would drive her crazy by waiting until midnight the night before or something all the time to write a paper. And I remember one particular occasion, I had a research paper, a large one actually, due the next day that I had known about for the whole semester. And of course, we were poor back then, didn't have a computer or anything. And she was a teacher at Clever, so I drug her to the computer room, computer lab at midnight or something. And she had to teach the next day. And we were there through half the night, and she wasn't real happy about that. But it worked out. And, you know, although this may be a bad habit, I think I can honestly say, for the most part, it's never really adversely affected my performance. Sometimes I think I actually work better, write better, think better when I'm under pressure. Seems it helps my concentration. I don't know why I'm like this. I think maybe being raised on a dairy farm, and now owning a dairy farm myself, I've really gotten used to physical work. And for some reason, if I have to sit down and write something, I feel guilty. I feel like I'm not working, like I should be up doing something. I know it's not true, because I know that actually it can be harder work. I'm more tired at the end of the day if I have to sit down and think and write all day than I am if I'm out working. So I know it's not true, but it's a mental block that I've got. Of course, we all know that the "Are You Ready?" that we're talking about this morning doesn't refer to a term paper. It doesn't even refer to a sermon. You know, I once read a quote from an author. I don't recall who he was or what it was in reference to or anything like that. But the author asked himself a question, and he asked himself, "Does the human body have a soul?" And he answered his own question by saying, "No, the human body doesn't have a soul." Rather, he said, that's not the right way to put it. The human soul has a body, he said. "For we are not a body with a soul, but an eternal soul that has been given temporary use of a body." And I don't know why, but that always kind of stuck with me. I always kind of liked it. So the important question we need to ask ourselves this morning is, are you ready for eternity? Are you ready to face the Lord? Are you ready for the judgment? Have you prepared your soul? You know, I think there are a couple of very important distinctions that we can make between being ready for something like this talk that I'm giving this morning and being ready for the return of Christ. And I think I'd like to take a few minutes just to discuss both these. The first is a due date. You know, schedules and dates are very important to us, especially it seems like in this modern, fast-paced world that we live in. You know, I can remember growing up and being on the farm working, and we would hear bells ring in Billings, Missouri, every day at noon to let everyone know that it was time to come in and eat dinner. You know, of course, even back then, that was done more for nostalgia than anything else, because everyone had a watch and knew what time it was all the time. But I remember that. But it just seems to get worse. You know, we went from watching the clock all the time to having a calendar that we write in, and now to having cell phones and PDAs that keep track of everything, that has an alarm that goes off when it's time to get up, when it's time for a meeting, when it's time to take our medicine, just everything. We get it all in there, schedule our lives down to the minute, and not worry about it. That little device will just take care of us and keep us on track. Our life is just one big schedule, it seems sometimes. You know, because of this, Most things on this earth, we can procrastinate. We can get away with doing that until the last minute, if we want to. Simply because we know when that last minute's going to be. You know, I've known for several months that I had to give this morning. And as the date got closer and closer, maybe I had less and less time to prepare. But I nevertheless still had time to prepare. I still knew that right now I was going to have to be giving this, and as long as I prepared it before now, I would be okay. But Paul tells us in the Thessalonian letter, the 5th chapter in the 2nd verse, "For you know very well that Christ will come like a thief in the night." So we're not going to know. We know that Christ will return suddenly. We know that no one knows the date. In other words, it will be very unexpected. And what better analogy could Christ have used than a thief coming to our house in the night? Because that would definitely be unexpected. But more than that, if we did know that a thief was going to come, but not when, if we knew he was coming, we know Christ is coming. We hopefully don't know a thief is coming. But if we did know he was coming, wouldn't we be prepared for that? Wouldn't that be foremost on our minds? We would want to be ready for when that thief came. We would do everything possible to deal with that thief. Shouldn't we do that even more so in preparing for Christ? After all, Christ tells us, as recorded by Matthew in the 6th chapter, the 19th and 20th verses, "Do lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal." Don't spend all of your energy building up riches on this earth and worrying over protecting them. Spend your time building up your soul and protecting it. Most of us would not be willing to gamble with much or any of our material wealth. Yet every minute, every second that we put off being prepared for the return of Christ, we are gambling with our very souls. You know, I recall a little story I read, and it was purported to be true, and I don't know if it is or not. It's sensible. It probably is. But it seems in World War II, there was an enlisted Navy man that had been placed on a small submarine hunting ship in the middle of the Pacific. This ship was not part of an armada or a battle group or anything like that. Its mission was just to cruise around the Pacific, follow leads, and try to find submarines and take them out. Well, the captain of the ship had drilled into his men constantly to always be ready. Be ready at a second's notice. We don't know when we're going to have to go into action. And this man had made sure that for weeks that he made sure everything was in order. He was ready right then. Well, as the days turned to weeks and the weeks to months, and nothing happened. They just floated around the Pacific day after day. He began to get a little lax. And it says that one day he was in the shower. And while he was in the shower, the call came from the man in his battle, for everyone to man their battle stations. He hadn't prepared his clothes. He hadn't done anything. So he says he had to run out of the shower, and he manned the anti-aircraft gun. That was his job. So he said he got behind this large, I don't know how big it was, but this large caliber gun, completely naked. And he was trying to shoot these planes down, and he says he can vividly recall the red-hot shell casings bouncing off the floor, into his legs, burning his legs and his feet while he tried to shoot these planes down. And he said he'll never forget that, and he'll always remind him, he always thinks of it, that he needs to always be vigilant, that he needs to always be ready for the return of Christ in the same way that he was ready, that he needed to be ready for the Nazi aircraft to attack a ship. You know, we can take a lesson from this and always be prepared. When you least expect it, when you're not thinking about it at all, you could be required to face the judgment. At lunch today, maybe Christ returns. Maybe we see Him coming down in the clouds. Or maybe on the way home from this meeting. It happens every day. Maybe we have a car accident and that's it for us on this earth. There is simply no known deadline. We don't know. The end of our life is a big question mark. Always be prepared. Always be vigilant. Because although the deadline may not be known, we don't have an appointment book, it's not written down, there nevertheless is a deadline. It is going to happen, and it could happen at any moment. I think another important thing that is different between being ready for most of the things that we have to deal with on this earth and be ready for the return of Christ is a very simple one, but a very important one. And that is, most of the things that we prepare for in this life have a point of completion. You know, if tonight we're cooking dinner, at some point dinner is complete. In preparing these thoughts, at some point they're complete. If you're studying for a test, at some point you say, okay, I'm prepared for this test. But I believe that in being ready for the judgment, that we're never really ready. Now, what I mean by that is, I of course don't mean that we never reach a point of being saved. Of course we do. We all know that once we've heard the gospel, we believe the gospel, we've confessed it and been baptized, we are in a saved state. It's just that I think that if we ever step back after that and smile and say to ourselves, I'm ready, that's the day we're probably not. That's the day we probably lost our way and made ourselves unready. Because in doing this, we've of course forgotten the final step. And that step is continuing in the faith throughout our lives, fulfilling the wishes of our Savior and Lord. For we all know, as He said, there is work to be done. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Our Savior's own words in Matthew 9:37. Now some might say, and I've heard this argument, that's not true. I'm not saved by works. We all know that. I'm saved by grace. I'm saved by faith. And okay, that's true. But I can tell you that if you have no works, then you have no faith. The truth is, one simply cannot exist without the other. It's impossible. If you doubt me, just take a minute and read the second chapter of James. There's a little doubt left here. James 2:20 reads, "But do you want to know, O foolish man, faith without works is dead?" 2:26, "For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also." So making yourself ready for the judgment is not really a checklist that you can work through, check each thing off. When you get to the last one, say, okay, I've got it done. As the soul did in Luke 12 and 19, and then say to yourself, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take ease, eat, drink, and be merry. We can't do that. No. The checklist, there is a checklist to be sure. And we can check certain things off. And I hope we've all done that. But the things that you need to do to be ready for the return of Christ is added to continually in the work that needs to be done. It's the list that you'll never make the final check to, but whether your Father in heaven will. Your job is to make sure that there are no tasks not checked off before that last square is filled in for you. So when will that last square be filled in for you? When are you going to die? Because rest assured, you are going to die. You know, I read a little story about three men who were attending a funeral. And this got them to thinking about their own funerals. And they asked the question, what would you want your obituary to say? The first said, I'd like them to say he was a great humanitarian who cared about his community. The second said, I'd like them to say that he was a great husband and father who was a good example to all. And the third one, after he frowned and thought to himself for a few minutes, said, no, I don't want him to say anything like that. I'd like them to say, look, he's moving. Just a little lightheartedness here. It's pretty deep subject. But now this may cause us to chuckle a little bit. We all know that that last man is not going to get his wish. We are going to die. And physically we are going to stay dead. Are you ready? You know, it's amazing the thoughts that your mind can process in just a few moments. Little personal experience here. You know, about a week ago, as I said, we milk cows. I have a dairy. And I was out feeding the cows on Saturday morning. And now we have a large machine that I put all the feed in. And it mixes it up. And then we take it out and we feed it in large concrete troughs. About 200 feet long, spread out for the cows to eat. And on this particular morning, I got out there and I was preparing to auger this feed out. And it had rained. And so I got off the tractor to see what that stuff was. But it had rained, actually, for the first time in a long time. But I got off the tractor because the troughs had water in them, and there's a drain in the end of the troughs that lets the water out, and it kind of plugged with debris. So I got out to pull that debris out of the way, and I wasn't really paying attention to my surroundings, I guess. And I bent over and was moving that, and all of a sudden, I just felt a terrific blow to my backside. And next thing I know, I could see the troughs from the sky. And I came down on my head, and I laid there dazed for a minute trying to figure out what in the world had happened. And just about the time I figured it out, here he came again, the bull. And he just went throwing me around and pounding me. And I'll tell you what, you don't realize just how weak and insignificant you are until you have a 1,500-pound animal that God has designed basically to be a living battering ram have a hold of you. And I mean, there was just nothing I could do. And like I said, it's amazing because I remember thinking, this is it. What's the family going to do? You know, am I ready? I remember thinking, I have a sermon to give here in a week on this topic. Am I ready? And I remember thinking all these things, and it just lasted a few seconds, and you think, there's no way to have all this going on. How would you have those thoughts? But yet I can vividly remember each one of them. You know, and of course the bull, he pounded me there for a few minutes. Well, it probably didn't last 20 seconds, although it seemed like a lot longer than that to me. And he finally threw me in the air. When I came down, I managed to roll over into the concrete troughs that I was feeding in and get away on the other side. So, of course, at this point, fear turns to anger. And, well, the story ends with a shotgun and a bull with a very sore rump heading over the hill. But anyway, I was just kind of bruised and banged up and okay. But it did kind of make this talk this morning a little more personal, because suddenly it seems "Are you ready?" kind of became "Am I ready?" It really made you think about it. Now we know we're all going to die. In fact, I guess we should back up just a little bit and say there's only one way that we're not going to experience a physical death. You know, our lives are generally less than a century, and 20 of them have passed since Christ walked this earth. So, you know, statistics would tell us that the odds are we're probably going to pass from this earth in a natural biological fashion. Of course, we don't know that, but it's probably likely. So whether your life runs out from the natural process of your body aging until it can no longer sustain life, or from some sort of an accident like a 2,000-pound black and white bull smashing you into the dirt, we don't know. But it is going to end. Of course, maybe, like I said, neither one of these things happens, and you do live to see the second coming of Christ. You know, in some ways, I don't like prophecy, and that's really the wrong way to say it. I think true prophecy is a wonderful gift from God, and we know that the evidences that we've read in the Bible, the prophecies we read in the Bible, have helped bring many people to Christ, because they can just see the truth of it by reading it through the centuries. But maybe I should say I don't like the way that many people let prophecy affect them. People have tried since the day that Christ ascended to heaven to predict when he was going to come back again. You know, I did a quick just web search on the second coming of Christ. You know, when it's going to happen. And there was some history there. And the first prediction I saw occurred in AD 375. He was coming back then. I don't know why. I didn't really say, but that was the first mainstream time they thought he was coming back. Of course, another occurred in AD 500. I don't know why. I guess it was just an even number. That's when they thought he was coming back. And of course, we all remember 2000, and the world was going to end then. He was for sure coming back. Well, apparently, 1000 was no different. In fact, if we read history, it even tells us that in 1001, that many families went hungry because they were so sure that Christ was coming back in 1000, they didn't bother to plant crops. Christopher Columbus, probably don't think of him much in this way, but he even wrote a very well-researched little pamphlet, little book, that said that there was absolutely no doubt that the world would end in 1556. Then 10 years later, 1666. Of course, the world had to end then. I mean, there's three sixes in that date, so it's going to end. Then we go on to 1834, April 3rd. A man by the name of William Miller. And I guess this was the first big event in the United States. And I guess he was a Methodist leader. I'm not exactly sure. But history tells us that 500,000 people in the northeastern United States gathered in groups to wait for the return of Christ. You know, I didn't, there wasn't a census then, and I didn't really try to figure out the numbers too much. But 500,000 people in the northeastern United States in 1834 would have been a very significant portion of the population. And they were all waiting for him to return. It said some waited on mountaintops so they could ascend more quickly. Some in the graveyards so they could ascend with loved ones. There was even a little tidbit that said that some high society ladies clustered together away from everyone else so that they would not have to enter God's holy kingdom, as they put it, with the common herd. Now, what sort of mindset you would have to think that God would find this idea acceptable, I have no idea, but there it was anyway. Of course, then we come to modern times, and a man named Harold Camping predicted the world would end in 92, then, no, 93, and then, no, that's not right either, 94. And I guess after that, no one paid attention to him anymore. And of course, we can go on till today, and we know it happens over and over and over again. But what has always perplexed me so is why these people that obviously care about God so much to spend their lives studying and poring over the Bible and trying to find out when it's going to end, neglect everything else. Why they would ignore simple verses like Matthew 24 and 36, I do not know. I guess the lure of prophecy is just too much. And of course, Matthew 24 and 36 reads, "Now concerning that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven, nor the Son, only God the Father." So why you would dedicate your life and your reputation and everything else to studying the Scriptures and trying to tell the world when it's going to end, I don't know. But many, many people have done it, and many, many people have been misled by it. You know, if we continue on in Matthew 24, we see that the coming of Christ is likened to the days of Noah. It says people will be carrying on their lives, expecting nothing, going about their daily business just like they did before the flood, not expecting Christ to come at all, because He will return unexpectedly. Matthew 24, verses 40 and 41 read, "Then two men will be working in the field. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and the other left." You know, these verses are significant to me, not so much because of what they say in this case, but because of what they do not say. What they don't say is the unrighteous man will be working in the field while the righteous man waits on the hilltop for God to return. Or likewise, the unrighteous woman will be milling while the righteous woman waits on the hill for Christ to return. No. Righteous and unrighteous alike will be going about their business, perfectly normal, day to day, and Christ will come back unexpectedly. You like a thief in the night, so be ready. But you know, all this speculation is really irrelevant to the question we asked originally. Are you ready? Are you? You know, I didn't spend my time this morning here drilling into you specific things that you need to do to be ready. I think that would probably be redundant to most of you. I think probably me telling you what you need to be saved would be a lot like me trying to teach you what you need to do to breathe. I think most of you have studied the Scriptures. You know what you need to do. You wouldn't be here this morning. We wouldn't be getting ready for this two-week meeting, doing all these things, if we didn't know what we needed to do. All of us here know what the Bible says about being ready. So the question just is, are you ready? Ask yourself that question, and then think about the requirements you know that God has specified for you being ready. All of us are obviously interested, like I said, or we wouldn't be here. All of us know what God has asked us to do. I think I can safely say that every one of us in here believes that Christ is the Son of God and obeying Him will save us. But have we all taken it all the way? For instance, have we all been baptized? At least if we're old enough. If we haven't, then why not? Why not? I mean, it really seems a ridiculous question to me with no good answer. I mean, come on, people. If you're here and you believe the book, either give me a good answer as to why you haven't been baptized, which there's not one, but anyway, try to, or be baptized. It's that simple. And if we have been baptized, are we continuing His Word? Are we obeying Him each day? Or did we consider that baptism to be the end, and now we're ready, and we have no worries? Brethren, I exhort you, if you say that you believe the Bible, then believe it. As I remember Winford Lee used to always say when I was growing up, there's only one thing God can't do, only one thing, and that's tell a lie. Why then do you sit there and only half obey the Word of God? God will do what He says. He will judge according to the rules that He set forth. He will do it. He can't lie. You know, there was once a frontier town where a horse bolted and ran away with a wagon carrying a little boy. Seeing the child in danger, a young man risked his life to catch the horse and stop the wagon. The child who was saved grew up to become a lawless man. And one day he stood before a judge to be sentenced for a very serious crime. The prisoner recognized the judge as being the man who many years before had rescued him from the runaway wagon. Hope swelled within him. He pled for mercy from the judge based on that experience. But the words from the bench silenced his plea. "Young man," the judge said, "then I was your Savior. Today I am your judge. And therefore, according to the rules which I must follow, I sentence you to death. Please don't let this happen to you. There's just no sense in it. You know the rules. You believe the rules. You believe in God. God's given you every opportunity to obey." So as we close here this morning, I invite you to come forward with any needs you might have. We implore you, if that next step that is required of you is to be baptized, then please be baptized. There's simply no reason not to be. God expects His rules to be followed. If there's anything else we can do to help you out, then please come forward. If there's something you need to do privately to make things right, to make yourself ready, then please do it. Please. Your life depends on it. Let's all stand, if that's the custom here, and sing the invitation song.